So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 83. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Force Ghosts. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi, everyone. I'm so happy Danya. To be back.
Yeah. And we also have Caitlin with us this week. Hey, Caitlin.
I'm back, too.
I know, right? And out of the dusty dunes of Tatooine, we have Ben, who's back.
Also back. We're all
back. I know, right?
Yeah. You're back, right?
It's been a while. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including The Legends of Luke Skywalker, which, if you haven't read or listened to, is kind of amazing.
I'm so excited to read this one. Like, I really want it so bad.
It is so, it's so good. Like, I mean, like, so here's the thing: is Legend of Luke Skywalker. It's not like it's like a young adult reader, right? And it's a really interesting take on Luke Skywalker. It's really good, though. Like, it's one of those things where, since we've talked about Aftermath series on here, so we kind of know what happens at the Battle of Jakku. We also talked about Lost Star, so we kind of know what happens at the Battle of Jakku from that perspective. And then there's a story, a tall tale, a legend of Luke Skywalker jumping from Star Destroyer to Star Destroyer with his lightsaber, crushing these starships and hurtling them down to the Jakku, which obviously is not what happened. It's a legend. But it's really an interesting take on all these things that you kind of already know about Luke Skywalker. My favorite is the story of him and the Obi-Wan Kenobi gang. And his name is actually Claude Plotter, not Skywalker. So it's pretty interesting. So it's fun to read the book. But check that out. Again, audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. It's absolutely phenomenal.
I'm really excited to read it. I also am, like, addicted to young adult novels. So that the fact that it's skewed younger is, like, not a deterrent at all. Because I tend to pick up young adult novels more than I pick up anything else. So I'm actually really excited to check this one out. Unfortunately, what is now happening is, because we are close enough to the holidays and Christmas, my parents have put a ban on me buying things for myself, because it means that they don't, like, they won't have anything to buy for me for Christmas. So they've basically told me, like, just fill up your Christmas wish list and then we'll buy stuff off that. So I am banned from now through December 25th from buying myself anything new. So this is going to get really interesting for any of the books coming out, because I'm going to want to read them, but they're going to be like, nope, you can't buy it. And unfortunately, this is one of them. I've been told that I cannot buy this book, which means that they will probably buy it for me.
Can I spoil it for you?
No.
But it's so good.
You absolutely cannot spoil the book for me.
I have no one to talk to about this.
Yeah, well, I have no one.
The whole point to doing the podcast is I have someone to talk to about Star Wars. And if you can't read it, Danya, what can I do?
Well, can't read it yet, and blame Christmas, I guess.
Okay.
Blame
anyway,
this over-the-top commercial holiday full of sparkly lights
and the Luke release Skywalker. of The Last Jedi. So no, I can't blame.
I mean, anyway. That's a different holiday celebration.
And also, none of us are, like, prevented from seeing The Last Jedi because Christmas. So there's that.
Yeah, but it's really difficult for my mom and dad to gift me The Last Jedi as a Christmas present.
Right, exactly. Unless it's, of course, a private movie theater.
Yep.
Yeah, that's probably never going to happen, but that would be really cool if that was the case.
I'm just saying, it's a pretty cool. It's a pretty cool idea. Yeah.
Anyway. You know what? They should spread out your Christmas presents through the month. So every day of December, you get a different present. And so, like December 1st, you would get the Luke Skywalker book, and then on December 15th, you would get a ticket to go see the Force, or the Last Jedi.
Yeah, you say except, that like except. I don't already have my ticket to go.
I'm trying to help, okay?
And on the 15th, like what? You're not seeing it on the 14th?
What? I don't have that as an option.
Oh, okay. Anyway, moving on.
Yes. So, if you can't sign up to Audible trial or don't want to and want to support us in a different way, you can do so by signing up to our Patreon. It is patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast, which means that as we're recording this ridiculousness, you can listen to us live in our Discord chat, which houses our recording studio. You can also, within there, join us and chat about pretty much anything. At this point, we're off topic more than we're on topic, I guess. We create all sorts of channels, so we can talk about anything that you want to. But yeah, it's really good. We also host movie nights and After Dark episodes. So basically, you can join us as we do any of those. But if you can't afford to support us via Patreon, we do also have merchandise for sale on our website. So we've got t-shirts and button packs available. But again, even if you can't contribute directly, signal boost. Tell all your friends, let them know they can come and listen to us as well. Spread the Star Wars love at this time of year. It's that little bit of sci-fi holiday cheer that everyone needs.
Yeah, yeah. I'll also say that the really cool t-shirts that say Resistance Radio have Poe Dameron's X-Wing on it. And, you know, he is the spark that will burn the First Order down. So it might be a cool t-shirt to wear during, you know, The Last Jedi. Anyway.
It's true.
I mean, technically he said we, not I. So he wants to be inclusive on taking down the First Order.
Anyway, moving on to the news. Sorry, yeah. We have many more episodes of Forces of Destiny, including the must-watch Imperial Feast. In this episode, you see the Ewoks trying to eat Imperial Stormtroopers, which is absolutely just kind of adorable because, you know, they're Ewoks and they're itty-bitty and they have Stormtroopers.
Cannibalism is adorable.
Well, hey. It's not cannibalism if they're not human.
So, yeah, it's not. They're prey. You know, they're tiny hunters eating their prey of Stormtroopers. Anyway.
I'm assuming that, like, the armor, like, because they didn't even take the armor off of the Stormtroopers, so I'm assuming that they're going to use it as, like, foil to help, like, cook.
Roast them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to be baked inside the, you know, we saw Luke and Han almost get eaten by the Ewoks, and now we got the Stormtroopers going to get eaten by them. It's okay. I'm all right with it.
They're not prejudiced.
Not at all. Their food is food, right? But unfortunately, Leia intervenes and says we need to go ahead and stop this. So she sends none other than Mr. Han Solo and Chewbacca to go see General Harrison Dula and get some rations for these Ewoks. And this tells us that Hera and at least the Ghost and Chopper survived the Battle of Scarif all the way to the Battle of Endor. So that is actually really, really cool to see right there.
Also suggests that, because a lot of people have said that it, like in Rogue One, it may not have been Hera who was the general of the Ghost and the one that they were referring to. This, I would imagine, very near as them, it confirms that fact. That was intended to be Hera, because these are all canon, according to Disney, so.
And the fact that they said that when they call Sidula, that was confirmed that was her, along with Chopper being in Rogue One, so.
Yeah, but the way that people do, they were like, oh, but it could be her father, and because, why, I don't know.
Cham Syndulla doesn't want to work with the Rebel Alliance because he's a jerk. Anyway, moving on.
You're assuming that people are logical about this stuff, Mike.
Best part with it, I gotta say, is between Han and Hera here talking about how the Ghost is a better ship than the Falcon. I will say, the fact that Hera made Han say that was just like, it was perfect. Like, you know, it's like Han's personality not wanting to say something like that because he loves the Falcon, and it's perfect for like Hera's, like, you know, humor to make him say something she knows he won't ever believe, but just say it. I thought that was absolutely wonderful. What'd you guys think about that little interaction between Hera and Han Solo?
I thought it like gave them a really interesting relationship, because the way that it was framed is that they've come into contact with each other several times, and this is like a running, like a not just like a running joke, but like a running theme between the two of them. Like it's been ongoing for a while, so it makes me wonder like how many missions they might have been on together, or if they like talk to each other quite a lot. Like how heavily have they been involved with like seeing each other? And now I'm like, this is the greatest thing. I want to know more.
What if she's gonna be in the Solo movie?
I don't think she'd go back that far, because the Han Solo movie is like pre-rebellion, so we're aware, so it's very young Han Solo, so I can't imagine that Hera would be in that, only because
we know about her past in some of the novels and stuff.
It seems like that's too early for them to have crossed paths. But like Hera in the Rebellion and Han in the Rebellion, like that to me is really interesting. Just that idea of like a friendly rivalry and lots of chirping and like ribbing each other, like that's really, I love that.
I think it's perfect, because when you think about like Han Solo and how good of a pilot he is, at least that's how he's set up in the original trilogy, right?
Yeah.
And then you even get someone like Lando Calrissian, who takes the Millennium Falcon for the Battle of Endor and is also promoted to general because of what Han says. You know, Han has some pull about what happened at the Battle of Tanab with Lando. And when you have someone else like Hera Syndulla, who's also in Rebels, considered one of the best pilots of the Rebellion, right? And her ship, the Ghost, you know, is able to sneak past blockade runners, and she even they claim that we don't call it the Ghost for no reason, right? So the fact that there's like three pilots who are very, I don't want to say have a reputation of being very good pilots, and they have their own ship that they both like hold to on a pedestal, if you will, the Millennium Falcon and the Ghost. It wouldn't be surprising that there's a little bit of a fun rivalry between the two of them. Between Hera and Han, and I just like that she gets Han to say that the Ghost is a better ship than the Falcon, when you know deep down he never means that. And then the best part is the fact that Leia, at the end of this, says no one believes that the Ghost is better than the Falcon. Like, and it just makes, you know, it just kind of like, oh, look at, she's helping him like in his ego that it's, you know, he's good. So I really enjoyed this episode, Imperial Feast, beyond the facts that Ewoks eat stormtroopers.
I like how that was an option of things that you enjoyed.
There is nothing wrong with that. Like I said, we talked about lemon pepper porgs on this episode. There's nothing wrong to talk about grilled, seasoned stormtrooper armor and stormtroopers. Anyway, any other thoughts on Imperial Feast?
Nope. Not particularly. No? I just thought it was really fun. I really like the Forces of Destiny shorts. Some of them are a little ridiculous, some of them are really fun, and some of them like crop up some like cool little tidbits of the Star Wars universe that actually open up more questions than they answer. So I'm finding them quite enjoyable so far.
Yeah, I'll say the one I didn't enjoy was the kind of one that was from The Last Jet or The Force Awakens with the old Han Solo and Rey. I don't remember if I know we talked about it on the show, but I don't remember who was on. But I was a little disappointed in that one just because I could not stand the voice of the old Han Solo. Although I think it might have been Evan, so it might not have been any of you who was on the show that day.
Anyway. Like, I don't remember discussing that.
I don't remember talking about it either.
Yeah, you guys might not have been here. Might have been an all-boys show. Anyway, moving on. There were a couple more episodes of Forces of Destiny release, Accidental Allies, The Happabore Hazard, and Crash Course. Do you guys have any thoughts on these? I will say I enjoyed them all, but again, the one I wanted to talk about was Imperial Feast because of the information we gained from it. Out of the other three, what was your favorite? Well, which one was your favorite?
I guess Crash Course, I think. Maybe. Crash Course was just really nice for me because it had more Hera and Sabine, and I love those two ladies, and also another Mandalorian who is a really interesting contrast to Sabine, who creates things. This is this Mandalorian who basically just like comes like flying in on this speeder, crashes it into a wall, and is like, bike? What bike? I don't have a bike anymore. No problem. Well, let me borrow your one.
But that's Ketso. That's been her MO since she appeared on Rebels, and you know, her and Sabine have a long history and relationship, so
yeah.
You know, that's who she is.
I don't have a favorite, but I'm gonna say my least favorite is the Accidental Allies.
Yeah, with Jyn Erso?
Yeah, I'll like, agree with that. It not to say that it was bad, but logically made like no sense.
Kind of clunky.
Wait, how logically did it make no sense?
I mean, one, Sabine never really said who she was giving that information to. So Jyn really had no idea who she was handing that over to. And that conversation that they had was largely missing huge amounts of context, even though we as an audience understand what side they're both on. But for each of them talking to the other, like, that context was entirely missing. So if you take it at face value, that conversation meant nothing. Like,
I'll take that. I will say, though, I feel like at this point in time, with Accidental Allies, like, if you look at, you know, what the story team has done with her, if you read through Rebel Rising, at this point, she's on her own, she's away from Saw, she's just trying to make do, and I can see her giving up the data just because she's already been chased by stormtroopers, and she doesn't want to draw any more attention to her. So she's like, you can have it, if it was yours, I'm done with, you know, just get away from it. So I definitely think it's an interesting interaction between Jyn and Sabine, especially since I don't think they ever actually get to know each other, at least story-wise, before Jyn meets her fate. Ben, any favorites out of those? The Happabore Hazard, or
I mean,
anything else?
I don't know. I think my favorite was definitely the Imperial Feast, just because of, I don't know, the characters we saw, but also, like,
stormtroopers being eaten by Ewoks.
It was also like a combination of like, it was like kind of everything we would want in one of these, where it's like, oh, it's like adorable, but also a learning moment for a character, and then also like, I don't know, like it has the warm and fuzzy feeling, whereas like some of the other ones were just like, oh, that's a cool snapshot in time, you know.
I thought we were choosing from the other three, which is why I didn't choose.
I'd agree to you. Ben okay, doesn't always kidding. Pay attention. In that we case, know that. The, so.
I would definitely pick. You're gonna hate me. The Happabore Hazard was great.
Is it because?
Yes, okay. It's because of the snot. Is it because of the snot?
You guys are basically young boys at heart. You're essentially like 12-year-old boys, and there was a lot of snot.
Yeah, that's actually yeah, why that, I like it, because like, can so you wrong, so I'm gonna have you stop. All right, hold on. We're gonna stop here. We're gonna talk about the Happabore Hazard for just a second, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on the other ones. But let's talk about this real quick. Can you imagine? stop. Imagine. Close your eyes. I want everyone to close your eyes. This is story time with Mike here right now. Everyone, close your eyes. Imagine this. Daisy Ridley is Rey, right? Luke Skywalker's daughter, and she puts her arm all the way up to her shoulder inside the nose of the Happabore, right? Again, if you don't know what a Happabore is because you haven't watched the short, it's okay. This is the giant creature that Finn was next to while trying to drink water when he was in Jakku. So she has her arm all the way up his nose trying to reach something. He lifts her up as her arm is in his nose going, And then she pulls out this just like, you know, metal object from it, and she is covered in snot. Is this not hilarious to anybody else but me? No?
Coming from the man who wanted to see stormtroopers roasted and eaten by Ewoks.
Yep.
Yeah. No? No, no one else? No snot? Ben, where are you at?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny.
Okay, I thought it was a great gag, but like I'm just like imagining in real life, not just the cartoon version, because come on, like it'd be like bleh. Anyway, yeah, moving
on. That's more of something that would happen to Finn, I think.
Yeah.
And so to see it happen to Rey was funny.
Yeah, I'll take that. Okay.
If Finn was there, I could see Rey persuading Finn to be the one to stick his arm up the nostril.
That'd be so great.
Anyway, moving on to two new Last Jedi videos have been released this week. The first was released right after we recorded last week's episode on the Star Wars Last Jedi website. It's a featurette of Rian Johnson talking about directing The Last Jedi, which I will say is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of this video?
They didn't warn us that it was a health hazard because I hyperventilated during both these videos.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you're fine, so that's good.
I know I'm fine. I came down from that by watching the Habibor Hazard, so.
Mm-hmm. The cure to hyperventilating is more snot.
Can I just say, like, that was a very, like, the director section was very quotable.
Mm.
Like, there's a lot, whole bunch of concentrated, he said something, and then a lot of, like, crazy crap, or like there was something like just really like, you know what part I'm talking about? He was talking about being very focused and then but taking a moment to just realize how like crazy it was that he was on set, and he the words that he used, it made me laugh. And then there's a part where I can't remember if it was him or somebody else decided to like run down like the cast and crew and give them high fives. He's like, I didn't think this through before I decided to do this. And then he's like running, high-fiving everybody. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'll say this, like, seeing Rian Johnson interact with the crew, like, they, you know, they threw a big birthday party for him and everyone, and he gives everyone a high five, and he's like, oh, wow, that's what you were talking about.
Yeah. But,
you know, he starts off by saying, like, he's like, being able to direct a Star Wars film was, like, you know, everyone's dream if that's what you want to do as growing up in, you know, growing up with Star Wars. He's like, I felt like I was a kid again playing with action figures and telling my own story. And it's just so big and overwhelming. But then when you get into it and you start actually doing it, you focus in on it and you start to just tell the story. And then when you take a moment to breathe and step back, you go, oh my gosh, I'm in this giant throne room. And you get overwhelmed again, just in the awe of it. And I think that's what it would be like. You know, if you're a director or if you've ever done anything that you're really good at, like think any job you've done, and once you start doing it, it becomes, you know, something that you just do, you know, because you're really good at this. And then all of a sudden, you realize you're actually doing this really amazing thing for that everyone in the world is going to, like, look at you for at the end, because you realize how big and immense it is. You know, it's like if you were a chef and you decide to cook your favorite meal, but the meal is going to be for the Queen of England or, you know, someone who's, like, really important, and then they're going to, you know, tell everyone how great or bad it was. So it's definitely one of those things where that behind-the-scenes video was really, really cool just to see. But I will say, I was really impressed that they did a really good job of hiding every single thing from us. And it is, and the only scenes we saw, the behind-the-scenes stuff, was stuff that was in the trailer.
Yeah.
We didn't see a single thing really that wasn't in the trailer. Like, Canto Bight stuff that we haven't seen in the trailers yet, other than, like, some of the pictures. You know, it was one of those things, like, you know, we didn't see, like, any, like, shots, like, in the Canto Bight area with the Fothiers or anything like that. We really just saw, like, the throne room that we saw that Rey was in the trailer. You know, we saw on Ahch-To, like, they were really good at hiding everything. What you guys think about that? Like, just, like, I know you were kind of agreed with me, Ben. It was like, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's great that I mean, they did this with Force Awakens, too, but, like, this feels like they're doing it more, you know, like keeping so much more under wraps. Cause like, this is like, I mean, I looked this up when we were doing the trailer, talk a couple weeks ago, like this is a 2-hour and 30-minute movie, you know?
Oh
we've
yeah.
We've seen like 2.5 minutes of it. And those are very specific locations, you know? So, like, the amount of this movie that we haven't seen is probably larger than in Force Awakens. Because, like, in Force Awakens... I mean, I don't know what part of the movie, you know, like, the Snoke stuff we saw is going to be at, you know, the Kylo Ren stuff. But, you know, looking at Force Awakens trailers, you know, we had snippets from basically every planet they went to in the trailer. And something tells me that this is just kind of like an iceberg tip, you know, of what we're actually going to see in the movie. So I'm really excited. I'm glad that they're doing that, because that way everyone's going in with this kind of fresh, like, okay, we are expecting XYZ because of the trailer, but that's probably only going to be a really, really small portion of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of just ready to have my mind blown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially.
I think that's what everyone's at with it. Because I'll tell you this, like, we also got, right after this, during the World Series, a new TV spot, a 45-second TV spot called Awake. And I'll tell you this, like, it didn't have a lot of new footage, but the new footage that it did have was freaking awesome. Like, I mean, like, it was really, really cool. Like,
it was cool.
So we get new shots of Luke, Rey, and Snoke, as well as new shots of the Falcon, confirming that we talked about, specifically when we talked about they were flying through, like, that red cavern that they were on Crate. And we said, oh, that has to be that, because, you know, we see the red dust on the ground and everything. And sure enough, it is. Like, you see it burst out of the ground on Crate, which is pretty cool. But first, the first most important shot to talk about was the opening shot is a flash of the Millennium Falcon with a hooded figure walking into the cockpit, and then the lights turn on. What did you guys think of Luke Skywalker in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon again?
Have you seen the meme or the like the GIF of where it shows the crew? Well, not the crew, but from the original series, and then the lights flicker, and it's just Luke, because other than Chewie, they've all died, and it breaks my heart.
Oh, that's really sad.
It was.
Well, I mean, we also don't know. Like, we don't know if we're gonna see Leia in the Millennium Falcon in this movie. You know, that could happen.
Yeah, we don't know if she gets on the Falcon at all at some point.
We like Leia, Luke, Chewie, and Rey, or something, like hanging out.
You're killing me here.
Yeah. It was very emotional to see him back on the Falcon. I mean, I think we all assumed at one point or another in this film it was going to happen, by virtue of the fact that if Luke was ever going to leave Arc 2, which undoubtedly he's going to, that he was going to need to be on the Falcon at some point. Yes. So I think that on some level I had mentally prepared myself for the fact that seeing Luke back on the Falcon was going to make me really emotional. Seeing it, though, was an entirely different thing. Like, I had to, like, briefly pause it because I got, like, really over emotional about it, because it's Luke on the Falcon, but now he's alone, and it, like, was a lot. It was a lot to deal with emotionally watching it. The one thing that I will say that stood out most in this particular, like, trailer over any other, and I've thought it anyway, is that this might be, when we get it, one of the most visually stunning Star Wars films that we're ever going to see. Yeah, like,
I totally agree with that.
It, like, from the small snapshots that we've had of the film, of which, like you said, Ben, like, we've barely seen anything. We've seen what they want us to see, and we've seen it in some kind of heavily edited context that may or may not necessarily be true, because they're not going to tell us anything. But the actual look of this film is probably, for me, the most visually appealing Star Wars film so far. Because there's something about it that just the framing, the like the way that the shots are tracking, the way that they kind of focus on certain characters, the lighting, just everything about it is just so beautiful. And I think a lot of that is testament to the fact that Rian Johnson is just an incredible director, and he knows exactly the vision that he wants. But I feel like it's going to follow on great from The Force Awakens, but I think visually this is going to be, it's going to be a lot. I think this is going to be, from what I'm getting from these trailers, is that more than any other Star Wars film, I might need to see this one a few times to get over, like, how beautiful it is. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think also, I mean, of course, like, Rian Johnson and his cinematographer probably, you know, were like, this needs to be a beautiful movie, and it's clear already, like you said, but I think also, like, I've never seen a Star Wars movie advertised like this. Like, red is, like, the color that we are seeing, you know, in every single aspect of the advertising. And it's, you know, it's being pushed, like, you know, this, like, the posters and the trailers and just all the advertising, like, it's this, like, they changed the logo to red, you know, there's throughout the movie that, you know, if there's any some sort of background kind of color that's representative of this movie, it's red. So I think that's really cool, because in, you know, Force Awakens, it was like the return of Star Wars, and so it had to be like the gold or yellow, you know, and really like happy, cool stuff. And now it's just like, Snoke's lair, that's it. Snoke's lair is like just red background, stuff like that. So I think the unified push in the advertising is also something I've never seen before, I think, in any movie at all. So that's also really exciting.
Yeah, like, two things. Just talking about Rian Johnson as a director, the fact that in that, going back in that, the clip we were just talking about, when Carrie Fisher says, he has faults, but I haven't seen that side of him yet.
Yeah.
And then, like, the theater where I live, the theater we have is quite small. So, but unfortunately, I don't want to drive home, go see Star Wars, drive back to turn around and go home for Christmas. So I think what I'm going to do is see it here. And then, because last, when The Force Awakens came out, I ended up seeing it twice within a week while I was home anyways. So I think this time I'll just go and see it again when I'm home for Christmas. At least twice.
Yeah, I'm probably going to see this movie like 8 times.
I've already got solid plans to see it 3 times.
I have tickets to see it 3 times already.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not ask Mikey.
I don't have it. Me. I don't have the tickets yet, mostly because my dad always buys tickets for when I go back to see them over Christmas time, and I don't think we know exactly what day we're going to see it yet, but like, there's solid plans for, like, I'm seeing it like midnight opening day. I'm seeing it when I'm back visiting my parents for Christmas, and again with a group of friends when I get back after Christmas. Yeah, so
those are the exact plans I have too.
Yeah.
But there'll be times in the middle there where I'm like, I just have nothing to do. What should I do right now?
Go see Star Wars. That's what I did with all the Star Wars. I was like, oh, I have nothing to do this Saturday morning. I'll go to the 10 a.m. showing of Star Wars, Rogue One. Why not? But yeah, so I will say I am a fan of this TV spot, and I can't wait for more stuff as we get closer and closer to come out, because seeing some of the stuff that we saw in this spot was just absolutely wonderful. Like, I will say, seeing the Falcon burst through the ground of Crait was kind of awesome, even though it was less than like a second long. Like, you just see this Falcon shoot up. It kind of reminded me of like it coming out of the asteroid belt, like of the asteroid with the space slug, like just like that type of visual. Like, you have like the kind of the ground erupt around it and everything, and it just flies up and then it goes something else and you're
I will say that where I guess The Force Awakens seemed to be more overt in terms of what it was hearkening back to, with like its references and kind of being like, oh, I'm paying homage to the original trilogy. Like, I feel like from what we've seen in the trailers so far, that it's not going to be that there is nothing kind of like throwing back to the original trilogy, but it's going to be in really subtle ways. Like, things that have like visual cues or reminders rather than being as like as strong a connection. So it's going to be so interesting to see.
Well, for example, correct me if I'm wrong, we do know that we're supposed to find out about Rey's background in this movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, which is, I mean, Empire Strikes Back, which is the parallel, we did find out that Darth Vader is Luke's father. So there are, like, I think no matter what, there's always going to be parallels with their corresponding original movie. But yeah, I think it might be a little bit more subtle this time, if nothing else, because of like the change of crew, but also because of that seemed to be complaints among some people last time. So they probably kind of noted that and are trying to be a little bit more subtle.
I'll agree with that, because that's definitely something, one of the criticisms of The Force Awakens, that it was recycled a little bit. So I'm sure that was something that they kind of considered when Rian Johnson wrote the script for it. Moving on, two bits of news before we get to our spotlight topic. During the latest, Star Wars show episode, Kathleen Kennedy got to sit down with the host there, and she revealed something very important. Is that The Last Jedi will have baby porgs. And this is very important because of all the porg mania that's going around right now. Not only are we have the porgs that are absolutely adorable, can you imagine what baby versions of them will be?
They already look like babies, so I'm not sure. And I'm sorry, sometimes babies of certain species do not look cute. So I'm kind of hoping that they're kind of like
ugly.
That cute ugly. Yeah.
I would love that. Like, if baby porgs were, like, there was something about them that's, like, you kind of go, oh my god, what is that? And then they turn into the porgs. I would love that. I think that would be amazing. And also would be such a Star Wars move to pull something like that.
Like, it would give it, like, a little bit of a sense of humor.
Yeah, it would. It would definitely be something that they would do. Yeah, but I don't know if they can, though.
Yeah, like, I was surprised in the beginning to see, like, I remember walking out of the theater, I think after the first time I saw Force Awakens, I was like, wow, I'm really actually surprised, like, how funny that movie was. Because Force Awakens, though it had a lot of dark stuff in it, was actually a pretty fun movie because of the comedy and the way it played out. And I'm thinking with this one, probably more than Force Awakens, it's going to need that comedic uplift more in parts of the movie, which is why I think maybe they're putting all this, you know, adorable stuff in it. That way, you know, when things get super dark, which I'm thinking they will, it's going to be like, oh, it's okay, we have porgs.
That's probably why Chewie has a porg with him on the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, probably.
He's like, I'm going to need a little bit of a lift to bring one of them.
Oh, after Han died, you need a little lift like that.
Oh, yeah, a porg does not replace Han Solo.
No, true. No, even if you give it a tiny little vest and dress it up, like, not even then.
A little Han Solo vest?
Okay, I would love that, though.
All right.
Oh, man.
All right, last bit.
Is anyone else getting porg fatigue, though? Like, for me, it seems like so much right now is just about them, and I'm like, I kind of need
They remind me of Ewoks.
Yeah, I think it needs to be reined in slightly before I go into this movie with, like, I'm going to be over them before I get into the movie.
Do you think that maybe they're pushing the porgs because they're keeping so much under wraps that that's really all they have right now?
What, like a misdirect kind of thing?
Well, not necessarily. Maybe just like, porgs aren't necessarily like a huge plot point, so we'll let the public adore those, but we can't really tell them about anything else because those are plot points, you know? So they're letting the public consume the porgs. Hey, LOL.
I agree with you 100% on that, Ben. I agree 100%. Because porgs, honestly, like, think about it. Porgs are on Octu. And that's it. Like, Octu is the very first planet we're going to see there. And we know that they go to Canto Bight. We know they go to Crait. We know that we go to wherever the new First Order base is, because where Snoke is. So there's, like, a lot of different things that we're going to see. And they're only supposed to be on one planet. So, like, I can't imagine them being there very often. But I think it's one of those things where when we saw the porgs in the first, or I guess not the first trailer, but the first or the second thing that came out of Star Wars Celebration, which was the behind the scenes video, and we saw them like in the you know, in that you know, I guess in the when they were building them in the wherever the room they had them before they were actually on set, people just like saw them and said they were adorable, and they just kind of started to like leak them out in other places and have them show up in different spots and different, you know, in the trailers. Yeah. And I think people are enjoying them. Like, honestly, like, there are so many different pork type plushes that why not right now? It, you know, Disney also does a really good job of making sure that they can sell merchandise. So I agree. I've been over pork since the second time. Hence, I was happy when I saw that, oh, they might be food and we can eat them. That was awesome. I was all for lemon pepper pork, which I thought would be great. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, they remind me of Ewoks, and I know older people don't like the Ewoks. I love the Ewoks, but that's also because I was a kid when I saw it, so I think people are going to love the Porgs. Some people are going to be like, they're just something else.
Yeah, maybe they're introducing Porgs at this point in this new trilogy because of the... I think the backlash to Ewoks was, like, they were coming off of, like, you know, what's arguably the best Star Wars movie, and Empire Strikes Back is really dark, so to follow it up with a movie about these teddy bears who, like... are fighting
take down the Empire, you
know, whereas, like, why not, like, introduce the cute part of this trilogy now during probably the darkest of the three movies?
Well, and who says that all species have to be big scary monster or weird things? Who says they can't be cute and fluffy?
Right. Oh, so cute and fluffy.
Yeah.
Why not both? Anyway.
Exactly. That's, like Stitch.
Yeah.
All right. Last bit of news that I thought was something actually kind of cool for Halloween was specifically a couple dressed up as Luke and Leia, and they had custom built motorcycles that looked like speeder bikes, and they had mirrors covering the wheels. So it looked like they were levitating. What'd you guys think of this video?
I want one.
Yeah.
It looked really cool, did it not?
I want one.
Like, yeah, I love it. I've never been on a motorcycle, but I'd go on one of those.
In a heartbeat, right? You'd be like, I'm just for it.
Like, okay, I don't know who these YouTubers are. Are they a couple?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, because I'm just kind of like, if they're a couple, why would they dress as siblings? Like, why wouldn't he just have dressed up as Han Solo? Because he was there too.
You know, it's one of those things where. I don't know. Like, it's more iconic. Luke, because Han Solo didn't ride the speeder bikes, you know? It was Luke and Leia. So I loved that they had a stormtrooper pull up, and then he ended up picking up Iden Versio from Inferno Squad, who we know is on Endor also, but we don't, you know, we never saw in the movie, so we'll see what happens in Battlefront 2 is officially released. But I think that's really cool to have members that were, you know, people that were dressed up like all those different characters riding around New York on speeder bikes. What else do you guys? Any other thoughts on this?
I loved it. Like, I just thought it was so cool. Like, and so creative to like do that. Just, I love it.
I also love just how the stormtrooper is just eating like fried chicken.
Yep, and he just drops a bucket and goes.
Yeah, that's good stuff. But also, I don't know.
Oh, hang on. Are you sure it was fried chicken and not fried pork?
Yeah.
That's very true. I don't know. But it also reminded me a little bit of, you know, I know this is like breaking fandom, but like in Dark Knight Rises, when like Catwoman's like riding around Gotham on that like speeder motorbike thingy, just the fact that somebody's on something very sci-fi riding through a city, I was like, oh, yeah, this is very Batman. But yeah, it was really cool. Really cool idea. And I don't know how long it took them to shoot that video, because like there's so many like aerial shots and stuff. Oh. And like, how much planning would this have taken?
I'm sure they had a friend with a drone and stuff like that. So
yeah, crazy.
It was really cool. Like I was impressed with it. Like it was awesome.
So anyway, next year they'll have like an AT-AT like walking down Broadway or something.
That would be a little hard to do, but that'd be kind of cool if someone could pull it off.
That'd be cool. I would be okay with it.
I don't know if New York would allow that. But moving on to our spotlight topic, because we just had Halloween, which is a spooky, spooky holiday. Let's time to talk about some ghosts, specifically Force ghosts. So, Force Ghost is an interesting topic because of the retcon of all the legacy stuff. We have a limited knowledge of where Force Ghosts come from and kind of how they are, I guess, created or kind of come to be. But the first on-screen Force Ghost was none other than Mr. Obi-Wan Kenobi on Hoth when he tells Luke to go to the Dagobah system. And I want to talk about this because this is the first time that we see Luke he really conversed with somebody almost. Now, obviously, in A New Hope, Ben tells him, let go, and he turns off his targeting computer, and he makes that amazing shot to destroy the Death Star. But, like, he sees him, and he's talking to him almost. What do you guys think about Obi-Wan Kenobi coming back as a Force Ghost?
It's definitely exclusive to the original trilogy at this point, as far as the main movies go. Like, I would love... I think Last Jedi has more of a chance than any movie so far to actually have Force Ghosts come back. Just because you're on, like, this island where it's, like, the oldest Jedi temple, and, like, you know, Luke has been probably, hopefully, talking to someone. But, like, well, we didn't see Force Ghosts in Force Awakens or the prequels, and I would love for them to come back, you know?
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. We'll talk more about why we didn't see them in the prequels in a second, but... You know, Luke is on an island filled with porgs and caretakers, you know, and so he's kind of isolated. He doesn't have any other humans around. He's doing his own thing. And you're right. I think The Last Jedi will be something where we could see, you know, a Force Ghost come back. You know, if he's going back searching for the first Jedi temple. Maybe Yoda. I wouldn't be surprised if we see, like, I don't know, just someone else as a Force Ghost, too, that we don't know. To kind of help fill some of that in.
Maybe for continuity's sake. I mean, like, because at the end of Return of the Jedi, like, we see, you know, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Yoda, and, like, just, it'd be cool to be able to see them again, so it's not just like, oh, yeah, that was the last time you saw those Force Ghosts. Yeah. So maybe, like, them plus other people.
Or Force Ghosts of Anakin talking to Kylo Ren.
You know, it would be interesting because we did hear rumors about Hayden Christensen doing some work, but then he's like, oh, no, that's just rumors. But maybe he came back as a Force Ghost for all we know. And that was just like everyone kind of saying, no, he's not doing anything. But that'd be kind of cool. Now, I will say we didn't see Force Ghosts in the prequels mainly because we learn about Force Ghosts from Yoda in the Clone Wars series. Specifically, that he tells at the very end of Revenge of the Sith that he has learned from his old friend, Qui-Gon Jinn, who's been able to communicate with him past it. And so during the Clone Wars series, Yoda is introduced to a Force Ghost from the Sith era, which is much older than Qui-Gon Jinn, Darth Bane, who, if you know anything about Darth Bane, and they've agreed about... The Darth Bane books aren't canon anymore, but the kind of history of Darth Bane is still the way it is. Darth Bane is the person who instituted the rule of two for the Sith. So when Yoda goes to Moriban, he is confronted by a fiery version of a Force Ghost of Darth Bane. And I know not everyone has maybe seen Clone Wars. It's a great series to see. But Caitlin, Donnie, I know you guys have watched it. And Caitlin, you've watched it probably in this last year. What do you guys think of Darth Bane as a Force Ghost?
Well, I mean, just in general, I think Force Ghosts are interesting, like, just as a concept, because I guess the big thing about it is that it's interesting for information's sake. Like, there's a lot about it that means that the Jedi lore, no matter what, isn't going to die out. So for me, there's a lot of stuff to contextualize and give a lot of context and just in general, like, continue those legacies on, even after a point where maybe there are no Jedi or there are few Jedi or there is, like, lost information that maybe someone else will have over like a lost manuscript or books or access to something like the First Jedi Temple or anything like that. So for me, just in general, Force Ghosts are really interesting as an information source. Because especially after, like, the destruction of the Jedi through Order 66, and, you know, there was a huge Jedi library and wealth of information there. Like, beyond, like, the loss of life, the loss of just information and actual history of the Jedi, like, documented history of the Jedi, was huge. Like, that so much was lost. So, just in terms of, like, a touchstone for their own history, like, they're really, really interesting. So, I guess, for me, like, any of them are kind of cool.
Yeah, I have two thoughts on it. I guess the implication I picked up from the Clone Wars was that just because you're a Jedi and you die doesn't mean you become a Force ghost. It yeah. sounds like there was like a learning process that had to occur for somebody to be able to either verbally or visually reappear. And which brings me to my second, like, I guess, rhetorical question is, what makes a Force ghost reappear? Like, do they get to, like, because there's dire circumstances people have been in where they haven't appeared, and then there's times when, say, like, Luke, when he passes out on Hoth, he sees Obi-Wan, who's like, I'm not gonna help you now, but when you survive this, go see Yoda. Like, sometimes they show up, sometimes they don't, so I don't know what the process, like, does it require a great amount of strength for them to pass along messages like that, which is why we only see them limited times.
Yeah, and, you know, as some of my notes here also go down, that we also see Qui-Gon Jinn also talks to Obi-Wan early on in the Clone Wars series when they visit Mortis, which was the nexus in the Force where we see the father, the son, and the daughter, which is kind of the visual representation of the balance, if you will. And, you know, he says it's because of the being a nexus in the Force. So I think it's one of those things where when you think of the Force as a power or something that surrounds surrounds every living thing and binds the galaxy together, there's definitely areas where it's going to be stronger, almost like a gravity well or something like that. And with that, you have someone who is strong in the Force, who maybe, like, again, if we take Qui-Gon Jinn, who is the living Force, looking at it now, he's able to cross over that bridge and kind of communicate with them and give knowledge, just like when you look at Obi-Wan appearing to Luke at Luke's most dire moments on Hoth as he's about to freeze, telling him to go to the Dagobah system to learn from Yoda. So I definitely think Force ghosts are an interesting topic because it's a way for them to pass on knowledge and pass on information without actually having to be there still. So they can't ever be destroyed, if you will. It's kind of like when Obi-Wan told Vader in A New Hope, if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you can imagine. And that's what it is because he has no longer physically living, but he's now one with the Force. And if you think about as the Force is him, that is more powerful than you can ever imagine a single person being, because he is everything that surrounded it. At the end of the Battle of Endor, Luke sees Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Anakin, who was previously performed by Sebastian Shaw and later Hayden Christensen. This was probably the most interesting time we've seen Force ghosts, because it was during a celebratory moment, and it was just the three of them kind of like smiling and nodding and like going, good job, like kind of an attaboy type thing. Do you feel like this was out of character for what we know from the Force ghosts and the previous that we've seen, or something that I think just like at the time the film was made that it made sense to kind of close the series out? What do you guys think about that?
I mean, personally, I think that at that point in time it was done as a nice closed loop for the series to end, or the trilogy to end that way. So I think at that particular point in time, it was done in order to, like, have, like, it come full circle and kind of show some closure to that original moment where it's brought up that, like, if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you'll ever know, and also close out that Vader story in, like, showing him having become one with the Force and moving on. So I think at that point it gave like some really good closure to the story, but I mm-hmm. think once they started adding more, I guess, to like the actual context of how Force Ghosts appear, it doesn't necessarily match up as well yeah. with everything else now that more has been added. But if you take the original trilogy in isolation, it works very, very well. Which means, I guess, in some aspects, you could argue that like Vader appearing alongside Yoda and Obi-Wan is not necessarily a dire straits situation, but is a very hugely emotional and important thing to see visually, to show what that, I guess, redemption via Luke actually did and meant. So there is still a huge amount of gravitas to that, but in a very different way to how we've seen Force Ghosts since that moment.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Like, I agree with Danya wholeheartedly. It's kind of more of a side note. Like, for example, in isolation, thinking about the original series, at the end of when Luke sees all the Force Ghosts, like, mind you, there's a party going on, so people are kind of focused elsewhere, but nobody else sees them. So do you have to possess, abilities with the Force to see Force Ghosts, or can they appear? Because I don't remember elsewhere if somebody who doesn't have the Force, if they can still see Force Ghosts as well.
And that's an interesting thought. Can people who don't have the ability to use the Force see Force Ghosts versus people who can't? You know, this idea of being able to see something because you are special permeates a lot of different, you know, fandoms in a lot of different areas. You know, first thing that comes to mind is, you know, Flash this last season, they had something where they only can see certain speedsters because they were a speedster. You also have that in other things where people are tempted by different things because they have certain abilities. So the idea of a Force Ghost only appearing to someone who has the ability to see the Force, I think that's interesting. Now, I will say at the end of it is that, you know, you have Leia and Han come up to Luke at the very end of Return of the Jedi. And, you know, I don't know if Han can see it, but I kind of think I like to think that Leia would be able to see them.
She has the Force.
Would be able to.
I mean, because she's Force sensitive. If you think it's the Force, or if someone who had knew them in life, you know, it'd be something like she did know her father, even though she didn't meet him. You know, it's her father. She knew Darth Vader. She also knew Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? You know, she knew who he was. Maybe not met him, but she knew who he was. So I like to think that, you know, she had, you know, she got to see them at the end. Maybe not Yoda, but, you know, she grew up with stories of the Jedi. So I can't imagine her not knowing who Yoda was or having heard a story of Yoda from her father. So I like to think at least Luke and Leia saw the three of them at the end. Whether it be, you know, Han didn't get to experience it, which we know that, you know, even in The Force Awakens, Han's like, I didn't believe all this stuff, but it's true, all of it. Like, there are these things that happen, and they're unexplained, and, you know, he was the perfect skeptic to take us on that journey of, like, learning that there are these things that happen. So I like the idea that maybe only Force users can see Force Ghosts, because that's where they have, that's how the connection is made. I also like the idea that maybe Force Ghosts can only appear and they can't actually affect things. Like, they can't pick up an object and, like, they're not like a specter, you know, like, or a ghost, or, you know, a modern day idea of a ghost or a specter that can throw an object across the room. Because I just can't imagine Yoda picking up, you know, a lightsaber that Luke may have dropped and thrown it at somebody or something. I think that would just be really odd.
Are you saying you cannot imagine Yoda using the Force to levitate something and whacking Luke with it? Like,
as a ghost, I can't imagine that, because I think that'd be like, maybe jumping the shark, if you will, or jumping the pork.
I mean, I just realized if he was able to do it, I fully and wholeheartedly believe that Yoda would be an absolute troll.
Yeah, I can too. But I just realized something. I don't know if this counts or not, but in The Force Awakens, Rey hears Obi-Wan Kenobi. She doesn't know him. She doesn't know he exists.
She also hears Qui-Gon Jinn, too.
So, maybe you don't have to... Ooh. Maybe you still need to have, like, the Force or be Force-sensitive, but maybe you don't actually have to know the person.
Well, if maybe you know the you person, have to because she's the daughter of Luke, you know, and that's
why. I was going to say, maybe you have to have a specific connection, meaning, does that mean that Rey is either related to Qui-Gon or Obi-Wan? Or both of them? Were they secretly married? Is Rey that child?
Fan fiction.
Someone write that. Go.
That's really, really disturbing, considering you have, think about it. Qui-Gon Jinn is this old man with a beard and long hair that raises Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's just like so wrong on so many levels. I'm sorry, but he's his mentor.
Because if Obi-Wan Kenobi had been female, that's never occurred before.
Yeah. Sorry, May-December romances and like that. I dated someone recently who was 15 years older than me. So, like, I'm not. Sorry. It's like, for me, like, May-December romances are not. Depending on, like, the age in which you started.
Yes.
He like, started as a young Padawan. He was, like, 10 years old.
No. I mean, if you end up dating, if, like, you... Like, if you are...
Like, a 30-year-old dating a 40-year-old is a lot different from a 10-year-old dating a 20-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. So, if it was at some point, like, in their later life. Then
you know, after you mean after Qui-Gon was killed and cut and stabbed by Darth Maul?
No, when Obi-Wan was like in his 20s before Qui-Gon died.
Guys. So that's my point. Like, you know, just saying. Spoiler alert. Just saying. Anyway, moving on to back to Force Ghosts. Could Force Ghosts have a relationship with each other?
Oh, there is such thing as a happy ending.
I had to bring it back. Oh boy.
Sorry, I'm just while we're discussing this, Mikey, I'm watching the Darth Bane clip that you shared, and I'm trying to see if he affects anything around him. To see if Force Ghost can, like, if it's possible that Yoda can troll them if he wanted to.
Well, maybe what if it's like a Sith ghost that abuses the Force Ghost power and manipulates things around them, but like they're not supposed to.
That's another possibility.
You know, so maybe Yoda's not able to.
But maybe Yoda can, he just chooses not to, right?
Sure, yeah, yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he affects anything. I think he, like, it's all illusion and stuff. Like,
yeah, because Yoda just... Like, he can't... Yoda just sent him back into his coffin, so... And he didn't touch anything. So... That answers that question.
And you know, and you know, it's really interesting. The idea of Force Ghosts, I do want to bring this up, is when we talk about Luke becoming more, you know, he said the really lines that everyone kind of freaks out about is, it's time for the Jedi to end. When you look at it, that Yoda is blown away that, you know, Qui-Gon Jinn has been able to come back and be able to be a Force Ghost and communicate with him. And he has proof that the Sith has been able to master this, you know, a millennia before with Darth Bane. It's kind of one of those things where it brings words. So when Palpatine says, like, the Sith have teachings that the Jedi would consider to be unnatural, but doesn't necessarily mean that it's unnatural. It's just anything could be right or wrong depending on the perspective, you know, or from a certain point of view, if you love to keep it with Star Wars terms. So it's one of those things where I would like to think that the idea of Force Ghosts and Luke in The Last Jedi being that he has kind of not necessarily embraced what would be considered dark side teachings, but just ideas of, you know, something that's a little bit not what would be what was the Jedi teachings. Does that make sense? Like, where he is kind of like trying to find a true balance. And it, And, you know, I don't want to spoil anything from The Legend of Luke Skywalker, but I will say The Legend of Luke Skywalker, some of the stories in there have made me think differently and really have framed up The Last Jedi in a certain way for me, where I like to think that, you know, when you look at the way the Jedi use the Force, where they control it, they manipulate it, you know, it, you know, we have things that it surrounds them, it gives life, every living thing has it, like, and obviously there's a very left and right side, you know, a light side and a dark side, you know, it's black and white. But there's not giving trust in the Force. And you also have experiences where, like, Luke is, like, let go, trust in the Force, that it'll affect itself, like, when he's going to blow up the Death Star. Like, he's completely trusting the Force. But in The Legends of Luke Skywalker, and I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm kind of hedging around this a lot, is that Luke is learning. Like, you know, the stories are that, you know, these moments that we, some of them we know, some of them we don't know, but they put Luke in a very specific light that he is traveling and trying to learn, which we kind of know what happened. We learned that in The Force Awakens, that Luke was searching for the first Jedi Temple. And we don't know if that was, you know, if this, what's taking place in The Legends of Luke Skywalker is before or after Ben Solo went, you know, cray-cray and killed everybody, but more one of those things where he is learning different things, like, instead of trying to control the Force, just do its will, kind of like what he did with the X-Wing. Like, he let go, he believed in it, and it happened. And I think that's where the line of it's time for the Jedi to end could easily be coming from, because the Jedi believed something very specific, whereas instead of just be, you know, trusting in the Force completely. So I think it's one of those things where the Force Ghost might be one of those things where having, you know, Luke be able to commune with them and talk to him and, like, kind of have a new perspective or a new point of view on how the Force and how his role should be. Because I know one of the last things Yoda said to him was pass on what he teaches or pass on what you've learned. So, you know, Luke obviously has a belief that he needs to teach this to other people, but not necessarily be, you know, teaching exactly what was taught to him as a Jedi, but what he has learned completely. Not, you know, I think Dex said it in Attack of the Clones that there's a difference between wisdom and knowledge, and I think that's kind of what Luke is learning in these travels, and what we'll find out in The Last Jedi. So, any thoughts on that, or any thoughts on Force Ghost, guys?
I'm gonna throw one other thing out there, because I literally was, like, really confused for a moment, so I actually went to look up Qui-Gon's age. I was like, how old was he in episode one? Dude, this is bull crap. Like,
what?
So Palpatine, okay, is younger than Qui-Gon Jinn.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
It's true. Mace Windu also younger. Who else is younger? Like, so many characters here are younger. The only character, human character, who is older than Qui-Gon Jinn in episode one, let me scroll back up, is Count Dooku.
Yeah, well, because Count Dooku was Qui-Gon Jinn's master.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, he is 60 in episode one. I assumed, okay, so in my head, I assumed that he was around 40.
Me too.
No, I knew, yeah, he was 60. That's why I instantly was like, that's really wrong, guys. Because, yeah, he's, I mean, 60 years old.
Yeah, I was 20, like, no, he doesn't even look, like, 60. Like, that's... I mean, to be fair, I would do Qui-Gon in episode one. Like, dude is smoking for 60. Like, holy crap. throwing that out there. But of, like, just for a little bit of context, I thought he was 40.
But, okay, here's, like, just to, like, play around with it. Like, I've mentioned this before, different planets obviously have different measurements of time. So maybe he's 60 on his planet, but that doesn't mean that he would be 60 on Earth. Maybe the ages so don't line, like, up.
He's like one of the Dunedain.
Yeah, but they've explained that. That's like, and they have galactic standard time. Yeah. So.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I don't, I would say, like, there is no universe, yo, in I which would, I believe that I, Palpatine is younger than Qui-Gon.
Yeah, no.
Why not? I would like, definitely think about it.
I would suck at galactic standard time.
We know.
Yeah, no, we know. I'll
Well, so here's the thing is, the reason why you have to believe that Palpatine is younger is think about in episode one, you know, have Ian McDiarmid being this young, bright senator. And obviously, I can see where you can think that he's older. But then you also have to remember 20 years pass and he's still the emperor. He's still living. And he goes through episode, four, five, and six, too. So, you know, that's another 5 years. So it's 25 years he's living on. So if he's older than Qui-Gon at 60, that puts him like 100 and something. Then. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be mindful, like, of the whole timeline.
One, he has the Force. So, like, I feel like you naturally live longer, just like a wizard. That's what he kind of taunted Anakin with, is he knows how to, like, control or stop death. So, if he was 107, that's still a possibility.
Yeah, and that's also, like, one of those things where they show you, like, you know, if you look at it, like, that's just a rule of, you know, that's a story, that's a legend. You know, have you ever heard of the legend of Darth Plagueis? You know, which, again, we don't know for canon. Like, here's the thing is, without canon, Darth Plagueis the Wise is a story that is in Return of the Jedi, or Revenge of the Sith only. Whereas you have Darth Plagueis is technically Palpatine's master in the EU. And so since that hasn't been canonized again, like, we don't know if that is actually true or not. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, just because Palpatine is younger by a couple years, everyone ages differently.
So yeah, looking, this is what I mean. Like, looking at, like, these images side by side.
I can believe it. Like, it's not a far gap for me. Really? Like, it's not. Well, I also know how old Liam Neeson is, too. So, he's that age.
But how old was he when he shot episode one?
He was mid-50s, I think. So, being a little bit older is not that. And with that, while Danya looks at pictures of, you know, Liam Neeson.
Danya, I missed you.
And Jedi. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you all for... If you have any thoughts on Force Ghosts that are not about relationships between the ghost and a human, please go ahead and shoot us a tweet at Our Radio Podcast. Thank you all for listening. Feel free to reach us out on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast or Facebook, facebook.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Ben.
And may the Force be with you. Not the Force Ghost, but the Force be with you.
And also with you.
With you.